What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
If I can be a winning Ryder Cup captain away, so it is an exceptionally big deal, and it adds a lot to my legacy.
For the best Ryder Cup build-up reaction and exclusive interviews, go to otbsports.com/golfweekly and become an official friend of the pod now.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now then, you're welcome back. So, Padraig Harrington interview coming your way between 8 and 9 on the football show after 9. Pat Nevin talks to us about the Premier League weekend that was. David Kelly with us as well. Vera Powell and the Republic of Ireland back in action tomorrow. But we are turning to rugby. Italy 7, Ireland 15 yesterday. So, seriously disappointing loss last Monday against Spain. Ireland's World Cup qualification aspirations now back on surer footing after the win in Parma, it must be said. So in this mini group, all four countries are level on 5 points. Ireland are going to play Scotland at the weekend. Italy will play Spain. Italy do have a points difference of 17. Ireland are plus 7. So there is a bit of a gap there. So if, for instance, Ireland and Italy both have bonus point wins on Saturday, then Ireland would still need to better the Italian scoreline by 11 points or more. So maybe relying on Spain to cause Italy some problems. But at least you would hope Ireland would nab the second place spot and make repechage later in the year. So World Cup qualification within their grasp. Very happy to say Fiona Coughlan, Irish international Grand Slam winner, is with us. Hey, Fiona.
Hi, Joe. How's things?
Good, good. So, look, we were all a bit miserable, I think. Well, you were. I was listening. I was asking the questions. On the back of the Spanish defeat, Ireland 15 points to 7 winners against Italy. Scoreless until the 28th minute for people who didn't see the game. And then tries from Bevan Parsons and Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe got the job done in the end. We'll come to performance in a second. Just in terms of sheer relief, I saw Ciara Griffin talking about the relief of, like, not going 0-2. You can imagine the weight off the team's shoulders over the last 24 hours.
Yeah, look, it was a huge pressure game and a huge pressure week, and you have to commend them on their mentality. What would have been a really tough week to review that game against Spain and have to have really honest conversations about their own individual performance, the performance of units, and then that of a team. Obviously everything was never going to be fixed in a week, but I think to get their mentality right going into that game and fix a couple of key areas was really impressive, and then to come out with the win and still lots of things to improve on going forward.
What did they fix, Fiona, or what did they improve on certainly?
I think certainly their defence was the standout thing for me. I was in the commentary for it, and that was the standout thing for me. A couple of things, their line integrity, their line speed, but also their decision making when to go in to try and slow down Italian ruck ball or try and turn it over. And they did get a few key turnovers. But, you know, apart from that, they were up on their feet, back in the defensive line. The line speed was huge. Like, Italy were under big pressure. They couldn't kick. Medea didn't have as much time on the ball as she had at the previous week against Scotland. So, and I think they spoke about it after the game as well, that that was an area they'd worked on with Kieran Hallett, and they were delighted that it had come to fruition as well. So that was certainly a key area. And then all the other areas still need improvement.
Okay, do they?
Yeah, like, I think if you look how important set piece is to launch off, and we definitely saw it for the first try from Bevan Parsons when their line out did function. They got a really good maul infield and created space on the blind side. And although it was a 2v2, like, when Parsons gets the ball, you're going to back her that close from the line that she's going to have the speed. But, you know, they had a misfiring line out throughout. The amount of entries they had into the 22 and line out, in fairness, Italy competed. They competed well, but it was a litany of errors, whether it be the call, the movement on the ground, the quality of the lift. And then once or twice, there was an overthrow from Clean and Maloney, but it certainly wasn't all falling on the hooker. I think it was, as a unit, it was really poor. And they use it. They need to use it to get the likes of Parsons into the game. So that's certainly something they're going to have to work on for next week. And likewise, the scrum got penalised 3 times in a row in the scrum in the first half. Afili was coming in at an angle And to be honest, I think they should have penalised a lot more in that first half. They got away with it from Holly Davison. And that's on the Lucid side. But in general, they're starting quite high. And if Linda Dugang happens to win the speed of engagement across the scrum, she can get herself into good position. But if she can come up against a team that meets her, she won't get herself into that good position. So set piece is a key area for them, I think, this week.
We talked a lot about the errors during the week and handling errors. Did that improve?
Yeah, look, there still was handling errors. There still was force in the pass, but it wasn't as pronounced as it was in that Spanish game. I think they got into, I suppose, working through the phases a lot better. Using the forwards, we saw big ball carries from the likes of Linda Dugang, Kira Griffin. You know, use the forwards a lot more as opposed to just trying to fire the pass out to try and get it wide. And I know there's that eagerness to get it to those two lightning fast wingers, but you have to earn that right to go wide. And they did it a little bit better this week, which reduced the errors. And also the penalty count was down, like for silly penalties was down as well. I haven't fully reviewed it yet. I'll do that later to see what the stats were on that. But it certainly wasn't as high as the previous week.
Yeah, I was in here yesterday, so I didn't see the game properly. Just some highlights. I know the discipline frustrated you massively against Spain, for instance. What is the root cause of the discipline issues for Ireland? Like, what the type of penalties that they're giving away? Is it game management or game knowledge, or is it tiredness, or can you put your finger on it? Because I know it frustrated you in particular this week.
It wasn't tiredness, no, because it was happening in the first half. It was happening in the early days. In some cases, it could be an eagerness to get the ball to force the opposition into, you know, making a mistake, and there's possibly an over eagerness. But at a certain point, you have to say, right, just let them have the ball. Let's have trust in our defence. And in fairness, they did against Italy. So that's really important that they bring that forward going into next game. But like, the scrum penalties really have to improve. And I know, I presume Lindsay Peat will be back in to start next week. She brings a little bit more stability, and her angles are better in the scrum than Laura Feely was. So hopefully we don't see those scrum penalties.
They're quite reliant on Peat, aren't they?
I suppose she is. I think Laura Feely's only started 3 games in the last 4 years, so they've used Peat a huge amount. And I know she's 41, but she's still a phenomenal athlete. She's come back from injury mentally, but she did give away 5 penalties herself last week. So, but they weren't all in the scrum. So, you know, you're kind of weighing it up about whether you want that set piece going well and to launch off it, or whether you can take a risk of Lindsay giving off penalties somewhere else around the pitch.
On the line-out not functioning again, there was an interesting piece even in the Mail on Sunday yesterday, for instance, wondering why, if, you know, somebody like Paul O'Connell is around and working with the IRFU, should he not be maybe parachuted in to do extended work here and there with the squad? Was that happening in your day? Is that something that you think should happen, that sharing of ideas?
Back in the very early days when we weren't under the IRFU, John Hayes and I think Paul O'Connell actually came out a few times to give us a dig out. But right. Look, I suppose they're two separate setups from a management perspective. The ladies team have, I think Stephen McGuinness is doing the line outs with them. I know Peter Sweeney was in doing the scrum, but he's not over there with them. So, you know, there's also a lot of things that are clashing. Paul O'Connell has his own commitments, both with the Irish squad and then elsewhere. So can't really be reliant on that as well. You know, I'm sure there's a sharing of knowledge from a coach's perspective. I know there certainly was in our time. Goose had gone in with Joe Smith into camp, you know, to learn from them. Joe Smith and Les Kiss had come into camp to us as well back, that was 2014, yeah, just before the World Cup. They had come into camp and done a session with us, which was brilliant that Goose was learning from them, but likewise that they brought it into us. So if there's an opportunity for it, just from a learning perspective, brilliant, if both parties are open to it. But you know, both parties have to be open for it, and schedules need to align.
Yeah, and are relations generally pretty good? Like, it sounds like there's a history of it.
Yeah, no, like, I suppose everyone just wants the best for Irish rugby regardless who's playing. And from a coaching perspective, they would have workshops, coaching level, whatever level you go up, that would have all coaches involved. And so, you know, again, I just think people's lives are so busy in their job, doing their job that they're meant to do, that if they cross over, whether they can fit it in or not is, I suppose, the key thing.
In your experience then, when the line-out's malfunctioning like this, how easy a fix is it with a view to the Scottish game? Can they just go back to basics and go for a very basic line-out plan?
Yeah, like I thought they, like, in, you have to give Italy respect. They double podded it up, but Ireland were trying to hit in that middle space in between the two pods, which is a hard enough throw for the hooker to make. She has to lob it over the first jumper and make sure that it doesn't go. And then the Irish jumper needs to get in front of that second jumper, which wasn't always happening. We were jumping beside them. So it's that movement. Well, first of all, it's the call, and that it's the right call, looking to see what the opposite, what way the opposition are setting up. Then it's the movement on the ground, which I said was quite slow. And then it's the quality of the lift and the timing of the throw lift. So, yeah, if they just pare it back a bit and pick some maybe simple ones. We rarely saw them go to two. They could have gone hard up for two and beaten that Italian two jumper, I think. They weren't exactly as quick as the Spanish jumpers. So, or maybe a bit more movement in their lineout. It is, it's slow. It's sluggish. Mm. And they did try to go off the back once or twice. But again, you need that throw jump. You need the ball to go first and then the jump to go and the timing to be right. But in fairness, Italy read it really well.
The other week, yourself and Alison and Niamh raised some concerns about team selection or certainly omissions from the squad. There were a few changes for the Italian game. Was this a better 15 for you?
No, I think Laura Feely was a weakness at loose head. You know, just from that set piece point of view, Sam Monaghan brought definitely a physicality that Aoife McDermott didn't. You might think losing height in the line out might make the line out even worse, but it was bad the first week when Aoife was there. So Sam definitely brought a physicality point of view. I thought Idel McMahon did well at seven. I would love to see Claire Molloy start there just because I know what quality she can bring to a squad. And then, I thought Lucy Mulhall was probably hard done by to be dropped off the 23. She didn't do anything wrong. She didn't get a huge opportunity with the ball. But Eve Higgins probably defensively did really well in terms of her reads and cutting down the Italian options out wide and getting a few turnovers. So from that perspective, yeah, I think the back line worked from a defensive point of view. I think our centres probably aren't creating enough to get the ball into the wider channels to the likes of Parsons and Amy Lee to get them on the ball as much as possible. So I think that's another key area we need to work on.
Okay, and it's the quality of Parsons and Murphy Crowe which maybe leads to some of the frustration, because you're watching the games in the knowledge that if they can be given a bit of a chance, they'll generally take it. Like for Parsons now, still a teenager, that's her seventh try in 13 games. And then for the Murphy Crowe try, she seemed to suck in, well, I don't know how many Italians, she beat a bunch of them anyway, and then it was a couple of passes out wide and Murphy Crowe went over in a bunch of space. So when you're watching Ireland, it's always in the knowledge that if they can just manipulate things to give either of these two a chance, I mean, and that's the brilliant thing at least, that you do have that quality out wide.
Yeah, like Murphy Crowe, it was seven defenders she beat, the eight defender took her down. Yeah. And she ran away from her support and she probably didn't know where she was going. She just saw space and went from it and then broke defenders, which makes it hard for her support runners. But look, she should be given license to roam like that. What we have seen in this qualifier, I suppose, is the two of them coming off their wing a lot more, which has been good. That wasn't happening in the Six Nations. However, we still have a habit of just firing it out to them and hope that they're going to do something, and not with a quality of pass and not with any space. They still need even a little bit of space to work with, which we probably haven't created enough of. If you consider the amount of times that we're in that 22, like, we should be creating more space for them.
And what's a simple thing that we could do that we're not doing, for instance? I mean, like, it would occur to me, well, just, you know, get a few players to truck it up the middle and suck a few players in and then shoot it out wide. I mean, I'm sure that's occurred to them. So what are they not quite doing maybe that they could be?
Yeah, I suppose it's the speed of ruck and how quickly they clear it out. And then a number of players, like the likes of Dorothy Wall, we haven't really seen featured that much at all. Like when we saw her so much to the fore and her ball carries in the Six Nations, and we haven't seen her. We saw the impact Linda Dugang could make when she got on the ball. She broke a couple of tackles and then it was quick ruck. And then I think when we get front football, I think our centres are getting a little bit flat, that opportunity isn't necessarily always there, or we're not playing the right option off it.
We touched last week on the issue of 10 and trying to find a 10, and Stacey Flood has been in there for the last number of games. I know I think she was 2 from 4 with her kicks, missed one very kickable one, which is a work in progress on her part. What about her overall game? Where is she for you, Fiona?
Look, I think she's definitely the player we have to stick with. She has all the basic skills to play in that role going forward. It's just a matter of her getting more game time to learn how to manage the game, like she has the passing, she plays flat to the line, she's no fear of taking it on herself, she can kick as well. But like when you talk about the kicks at post, like even in sevens, she wouldn't be the main kicker. Lucy Mulhall would be drop kicking for the scores. So she hasn't had a huge amount of time at any level actually kicking. She just has that natural kick coming from a soccer and Gaelic football background, and she wouldn't have had a huge amount of time to practice and practice under pressure. So I hope they stick with her going forward. Hopefully next weekend we'll have a qualified for the World Cup.
Yeah.
But like the year ahead is huge because they're looking for sevens qualification as well for the World Cup next September. So it's how they balance that she gets enough game time that she's 15s ready as well.
Yes. And so with the view to Scotland then, I mentioned the points different situation. Italy are in the driving seat here really to qualify automatically. Ireland,
I think it's actually head to head.
Is it? I've read about five different articles and I've just gone with the majority here. There seems to almost be confusion. So you think it's head to head?
Yeah, I'll double check it later, but I think it could be head to head. So basically if we win, Italy win, we go forward.
On head-to-head, okay.
If we win, but Italy win with a bonus point, they'll go ahead of us.
That simple. Okay, well, that makes it far easier, obviously, than trying to haul back 10 points plus in points difference. Like I said, I've seen both, so there seems to be confusion out there. So if it's head-to-head for a second, that makes things much easier. Ireland should beat...
Unless Spain beat Italy.
Oh, well, listen.
Then they go ahead.
Yeah, well, geez, then we'll all be scratching our heads. So yeah. Ireland should beat Scotland, or should they, I presume?
Look, going into this tournament, Ireland were my favourites. I thought they could beat every team. I think they can beat Scotland. Scotland certainly improved from their first week out, which was a really disappointing performance for them. But, you know, there's key areas in their game. They get sucked in really narrowly, so that space should be there for our danger players. Their set piece is poor. Their line out again as well malfunctioned. So I would have Ireland down as favourites, but again, it's keeping that good defensive integrity that they had last week and improving on their set piece. And if they do that, I certainly think there'll be more opportunities to score more tries and beat Scotland.
Okay. And in overall terms, Fiona, do you characterise this Irish team as very much one in transition at the start of their journey, or how would you, you know, tee them up for people who are tuning in and watching these games and trying to get a fair level of expectation? Because it's very easy, and we did it last week, it's very easy to compare them to the Grand Slam winning era and think, well, you know, it's all going downhill. How would you present almost this Irish team in 2021 to the public watching?
Yeah, look, I hate still talking about transition with the squad because I seem to have been using that word for the last 4 years, but there is still a lot of new faces in there with not a lot of 15s experience under their belt. I think that they have potential to do well, but I just think they need more time together, more time at that high level international. And you know, that's if they do qualify, or if they have to go, they come second and have to go to the qualifier, the World Repechage in December, that there's a level of consistency with the players that we're seeing in the squad, that it's not a load of new players again, that if the sevens go, that we're back in with another cohort of players. And that's key. There's just been a lack of consistency over the last 4 years. Yeah, obviously there's some players, the likes of Lindsay Peets and Inupu, that have been there, but around that there's been so much change that it's a tough place. But if they do qualify next weekend, they go into a nice pool for the World Cup. It's USA, Canada and Asia 1, so that's the pool you want to be in, as opposed to qualifying in December. You go in with New Zealand, Australia and Wales, so that's another nugget to apart from just getting to New Zealand, is the pool that you get in as well.
Okay, that's a nice incentive. And at this stage in 2021, with the view to the World Cup next year, certainly the last number of years, it has felt like the sevens has been a priority and getting it up and running has been a priority. What do you feel the IRFU's priority is at the moment now between sevens and 15s in the women's game?
Well, currently at this moment in time, it is 15s. But as the year progresses, it'll be interesting to see what's done. They obviously say it's one big programme, but we had the Interpros there last week, and there's a number of sevens contracted players that aren't in the current 15 squad that weren't playing in the Interpros, which for those players, it would have been huge, valuable time for them, whether they're playing 15s or sevens. But also for the tournament, to have more players at a higher level, I think would have been good as well. So it still seems like sevens is a priority. But I think that'll come a little bit clearer as the year goes on, when there's clashes between sevens and 15s competitions about where the IRFU stand on it. As I said, it's a World Cup sevens year as well, yeah. So it is going to be tough.
And do you feel like 15 should be the priority in the country with this tradition, or do you see the value of sevens?
I love sevens, and I do see, like, it's an Olympic sport, all eyes on it, Olympics time. But as a casual viewer, and seeing, because they play in countries and the time differences, you don't get to see them play an awful lot. And you have to be very committed to watch the sevens tournament for a whole weekend. Like, it's not just an hour and a half out of your day. Like, it is a whole weekend, and, you know, every 3 hours over 2 or 3 days they have a game. So again, that's not appealing for a viewer to have to commit to that. Like, sevens tournaments are obviously brilliant social occasions and things like that, but I don't know how much rugby people actually see.
No, it's not a Six Nations game live on national television, for instance, and everybody watching it, yeah. Listen, we're out of time. We will talk next week, I suspect, so we'll see how they go against Scotland. Fiona Coughlin, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Cheers. Thanks, Emil.
Cheers. Fiona Coughlin with us there. And our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in. Padraig Harrington on the way between 8 and 9.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.